Well, hello. I want to take this moment to welcome all of you who are also watching online or at one of our other church locations. Thanks for hanging out with us today. I'm excited to be here. And I want to start kind of by talking about when my wife and I had first gotten married. We were 21 years old, so we were young and had this kind of adventurous spirit. And so we decided we wanted to do something we had never done. We planned a whitewater rafting trip. We were looking to kind of experience and take on the world. And so we booked this trip and we started doing some research. And I found out that they classify rapids on a scale of 1 to 5. And, you know, 1 being like a gentle stream, 5 meaning you're going to die. And so we decided we were probably 2 people. Like, that was our zone and we were going to own it. And so we booked this kind of gentle, safe, but still fun rapid. It was a class 2 rapid at the Royal Gorge River in Colorado. It's going to be a great trip and have some fun. Well, we're getting ready to leave, and one of my friends had found out that we were going on this trip, and he asked if he could join us. And I said, I don't know. It's kind of me and my wife. And he's like, but I'll throw in for gas. And I'm like, you're in. Come on in. We're newlyweds. We'll take it. And so he comes with us. And to be honest, we didn't really know him all that well. He was an acquaintance. But he's coming with us. His name was Paul. And as we're driving, we got to know Paul. And what we began to realize was he might not be a class 2 kind of guy. Paul was one of those adrenaline junkies. Some of you risk takers out there, Paul is just, you could tell from his stories that he's sharing as we're driving that he's going to try to kill us on this trip. And so we get to the river, and when we get there, we find out that this past week, before we got there, there was rain in this area like they had never seen. They've gotten more rain in the past week than they'd had in many years combined. And the river was no longer a class 2 rapid. They said that actually it was the most dangerous it had ever been. The river guides were talking to us, and they said, listen, truthfully, 3 guides had died on the rapid the week before. This is no longer vacation. This is no longer a trip. And so the guide is telling us, he's like, listen, just so you know, you're going to see some real class 4 rapids, some class 5 rapids out there. This is intense. And so my wife and I were like, okay, great, thanks. We're going to go ahead and leave. We'll stop at a Cracker Barrel on the way home, and we'll call it a road trip. Like, that was risky. All right. Paul, on the other hand, is there with us, and Paul is starting to get a little bit too excited. The more he finds out about how dangerous the river is, he's getting more amped. And you know when, like, risk takers are excited, they use the word bro after every other word in their sentence. He starts, bro, this is going to be sick, bro. And, you know, the guides who run these rapids, they're kind of risk takers. So he and the guide have, like, this, like, connection, and they're broing each other back and forth. Tubular, I think they said that. It's weird. And so we're starting to pick up on, like, Paul's like, come on, you can do it. And we wouldn't have, but we were with somebody. You ever have that friend who just convinces you to do something stupid? Well, that was Paul for us. And somehow, I don't even know how to this day, somehow Paul convinces us to get in this raft. And, you know, we're putting on our helmet. I'm thinking, okay, this is different than the safe trip we had planned. We start going down this river, and it is the scariest 3.5-4 hours of my life. Like, in Colorado, somewhere right now, there is a paddle with my handprints on it, because I squeezed that thing so hard, and I'm going down the river, and I remember looking at my wife, and there was a moment where I, like, looked at her, and she reached out to me like we were Jack and Rose on Titanic. We thought we were done. This was it. We're saying goodbye. There's not enough room for you on the board, Jack, go. You know, like, it was just dangerous, right? And then we're going through this rapid. There was never a moment of, like, rest and okay, we're safe. Like, it was constant rapid after rapid. It was terrifying, okay? We make it to the bottom of the river. We get off, and we're done with this trip. And I remember my wife and I, our eyes meet. I hug her like I just returned from war. And we're just so glad to be alive. And Paul's like, let's do it again. And I'm like, you're walking home. It was so scary. We get in the car. We're heading back to the house. We're glad we did it. And we're talking, and we're like, man, that was scary. But in a way, it was exactly the adventure we were hoping to have. And we start talking, we're like, I'm not even sure that a class 2 rapid would have given us the same adventure. See, that's the thing with adventure, right? It's risky, it's unpredictable, and it can be scary. And to be honest, this is the kind of life that God invites us into, a life of faith that feels like an adventure, at times feels risky. And 1 Peter 1:18, this is how God describes our life. It says, your life is a journey. You must travel with a deep consciousness of God, using words like journey and travel. I mean, these are key words that we use when we're talking about any kind of adventure. Our life living by faith especially, can be an adventure. The problem is we don't really want adventure. Like my wife and I, we don't really want adventure. We don't want things to be unpredictable or too scary. We want plan A. At least I do, right? I want the right job, the right house, the right family, the right amount of friends, the right amount of income, a Super Bowl victory for the Miami Dolphins. See, we all want the same things. We all want the same things. Clearly, plan A isn't built on reality. Plan A is our version of the perfect life, a life well planned out. However, you know, things don't always go the way we plan. Proverbs 16:9 says this: we can make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Basically, we can have plan A, but sometimes God will bring us through plan B. And plan B can feel like an adventure, like a risk at times. So here's the key thought. If you're taking notes, I'd ask you to take notes. You grab that outline out and follow along. Would you write this down? What if God's plans are different than our plans? Sometimes plan B can represent something that God wants you to do that will stretch you. The reality is that as we follow him, there are often going to be times where God brings us to seasons where he tests our willingness to follow him. And we get a great picture of this, a person in the middle of one of their, you know, defining faith moments of their life, as we look at the life and story of Joshua in the Old Testament. And if you've never read this, or even if you have read this, I want to encourage all of us in here today to read this sometime this week. It's found in Joshua chapters 1 through 4, the story we're going to go through. I'm not going to go through every detail of it. I'll have to paraphrase at times. So you want to make sure you reread that or read it for the first time this week. It's a great story. And if you don't know who Joshua is, though, let me kind of fill you in right now. Joshua is the guy who takes over leading the nation of Israel after Moses dies. So he's kind of the number two in command. And then when Moses dies, he steps into leadership, which are some pretty big shoes to fill. Moses was obviously a man called by God, and God used Moses to rescue the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, and God tells Moses to lead them through the desert to the promised land. However, under Moses' leadership, that they never make it there. They never make it to the promised land. Somehow, they kind of stall out. They reach the Jordan River, and instead of crossing to the other side, on the other side of the Jordan River was the promised land. They make it to the Jordan River, and because of lack of faith and fear, they never cross. They just kind of stay there, and then Moses dies. And this is where Joshua now takes over. In Joshua chapter 1, God tells Joshua, listen, you're now my guy. I'm going to use you to do what Moses never led my people to do. I'm going to ask you to step out in faith. I want you to lead the nation of Israel across the Jordan into the promised land that I have for them. Now, this was a major faith-testing moment for Joshua. And it was an opportunity for Joshua to show God, I'm willing to follow you and step out in faith. But it was a faith-testing because the Jordan River wasn't a small body of water. It was a large body of water. And what we'll read here in a moment tells us that at that time, it was overflowing. Much like my whitewater rafting trip, the river was bigger, scarier than it had ever been. And so it's now a raging rapid. And so God's asking them literally to step out in faith and potentially risk their lives and trust him. I know for Joshua that this would have been a concerning, scary time as he's thinking about the new role he's got, the lives that he's now responsible for, and God's asking him to step out and trust him and to cross this river. Now, God does give Joshua some encouragement in chapter 1. He tells him, if you step out in faith, I'll step in faithful, and I'll provide a miracle. He says, if you step into the water and trust me enough to go into the water, that I'll actually cut off the flow of the river. I'll stop the river. It'll pile up on one side, and then the rest of the water will go dry, and you can cross on dry ground. But you're going to have to step into the water first. Here's actually how God says it to Joshua in Joshua chapter 3, and this is where we'll jump into the story. It says this, the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to honor you in the eyes of all the Israelites. Then they'll know that I'm with you, just as I was with Moses. Speak to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant. And so if you've seen Indiana Jones, you know what the Ark of the Covenant is, right? If you don't, it's where the Ten Commandments were kept. It also signified God's presence among his people. So that's what they're carrying. So speak to the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant and tell them, when you reach the edge of the Jordan River, go into the water and stand there. Basically, God says, if you step out in faith, I'll step in faithful, but not until you go into the water. I mean, talk about an intense situation. I mean, think about this. Joshua is a real guy. He's a real person. He's new in his leadership role. And again, looking at the people that he had following him, I imagine he had a bunch of what-if questions, as we find in these moments of our life. I bet he's thinking, what if I didn't hear God correctly? What if everyone drowns? What if I'm not as good a leader as Moses? What if God doesn't come through like he says he will? And then what if, what if, what if? And God doesn't, you know, give him any of those answers. He just tells them to get ready to live the adventure and step out in faith into the water. And this isn't just something that God did in the Old Testament. He does this today. I mean, we all face a Jordan at some point, a difficulty or a hurdle that we have to overcome. And even now as I'm saying it, I'm putting together why my parents named me Jordan, a difficulty or a hurdle they had to overcome in their life. I made that true for sure. It's something in between the life we have and the life we want. Or for some of us, the life we have and the life we feel God's even promised us. And many times there's one thing that gets in the way of us to be willing to take that first step and trust God, and it's fear. Would you write this down? Point number one is fear kills more dreams than failure. The fear of what might happen often keeps anything from ever happening, anything good or bad. And so we kind of end up with this safe but unfulfilling life, not exactly what God had planned. And we can try to avoid things in life that disrupt our plans. If we're not careful, we can kind of live our life the way my wife and I spend the mornings. Because if you're a parent in here, you know, if you can wake up before the kids get up and sneak in a few moments of silence, it's gold. Right? And so for my wife and I, we always wake up before the kids. We do this on purpose so we can actually have a cup of coffee. But in those mornings, we hold our breath. I mean, we have developed a way to communicate without using words. We're using hand gestures like we're Navy SEALs about to kick in a door. Like, we're not talking. We cook. We make the coffee outside. Like, we're weird. But we just don't want to wake them up. If you've got young kids, you know, it's take the moment, take the silence. Don't disrupt the calm. And sometimes this is how we can live our life. Right, we can begin to do this, especially in seasons when we feel like God might be asking us to disturb some of the calm or comfort in our life and take a step of faith. We can tiptoe around God's plans for us, the way my wife and I tiptoe around the house, and we can settle for what feels comfortable. And this is exactly what happened to the Israelites before Joshua took over. See, under Moses' leadership, they had done some pretty great things. Moses led them, like I said, out of slavery, out of Egypt. And when they left, they were confident in God. They were rescued and saved and ready to take on the adventure of faith and follow God and follow Moses to the promised land. But somewhere after being saved and before the life God promised them, they stopped moving, stopped trusting. Their faith stalls out, and they never cross the Jordan. They settle for somewhere in the middle, somewhere after saved, and somewhere before the life God promised them. And I can imagine the same fear that was, you know, a part of Israel's past was present in the heart and mind of Joshua as he was getting ready to lead the nation of Israel to do what God was asking them to do as a step of faith. And so let's jump back into our story and kind of see where Joshua's at this point. And it says this in Joshua chapter 3, verse 14. It says, "So the people took their tents down. They prepared to go across the Jordan River. The priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. The water of the Jordan was going over its banks. It always does that at the time the crops are being gathered. And the priests came to the river." You see, when you read the Bible, you've got to try to learn to read it and see it at the same time. Because if not, we can if we're not careful, just kind of read past these epic moments in the Bible. Right? Like, you can see this in a movie. Like, this is one of those classic scenes. And so you got the priests walking up to the edge of the river. It's a rapids right now. They've never gone this far. Moses didn't take them here. Joshua's telling them to go there. They know it's a step of faith, and they're on the banks of the river. I can't imagine what was going through their minds. I'm sure they were probably thinking, God, you couldn't have picked the dry season? Did you have to pick the rainy season? I'm sure Joshua's thinking, as the leader, God, if you don't come through right now, we won't make it. If you don't come through, we won't make it. Have you ever felt that way? Maybe in these plan B seasons? God, if you don't come through for me, I'll drown. I've been there. A season of my life where I was really battling with depression, and I remember coming to a point where I just said, God, if you don't help me, I won't make it. I remember last year when my second son, Colin, was born. Some of you know this story. There were some complications, and I remember we're in the hospital, and I'm praying to God and saying, if you don't come through for me in this moment, I don't feel like we'll make it. These plan B seasons can be gut check moments of our faith. And often fear tries to stop us from trusting. It can be paralyzing. It can leave us at the shore of the river, never taking the step. Often the most paralyzing fear is the fear of the unknown. What will happen if I do this? If I take this step? And we don't always have the luxury of knowing that answer, but we do have the comfort that God tells us he has a plan. In Jeremiah 29:11, God says this, I know what I'm doing. I have it all planned out. They're plans to take care of you, not abandon you. Plans to give you the future you hope for. He says, I have a plan, but it's going to take faith. You got to trust me. But if we allow fear to convince us to avoid this adventure and risk at times of faith, and instead only follow God when it's easy, we just might miss out on what God has planned for us on the other side of our obedience. And obedience is the key word. Because this isn't a talk like or a message about, you know, let's all become like this kind of like weird adrenaline junkies for Jesus and sell everything we own and risk everything and make some poor decisions and call it faith. Like, that's not what this is. Obedience is the key word. You see, Joshua knew God had told him to cross the river. So it wasn't just risk, it was obedience. Risk for the sake of risk is stupid. I'm just feeling too comfortable, so I'm going to risk and show God how much faith I have in him. That's not what Joshua was doing. But risk, because you feel like Jesus is asking you to risk, that's faith. And so there's a difference. And when we have these seasons of life where we know what God's asking us to do and it feels like our Jordan River moment in our life, stepping out is a step of obedience, and it's God inviting us to move past our comfort zone and trust him. If you would write this down, point number two is God wants me to trust without limits. I start to limit the journey that God has for my life when I start to tell God where I won't go and what I won't do. However, the reverse is also true. When I put everything on the table and go all in and just trust God, some pretty exciting things can happen. And the truth is, we all know this, right? If we were to avoid everything in our life that wasn't part of our plan, we're going to often and miss out on what is always the best part of any story. Because the part of any story that is worth telling is the part that wasn't part of the original plan. That's what makes it a good story. It's like when my older brother and I went golfing. And I'm not a golfer. Some of you might golf. I'm not into golfing. I'm not good at it. But we would go sometimes together, and it's really uneventful for me. It's embarrassing, to be honest. I spend the entire day, you know, dragging, you know, the cart, wondering, what am I doing on this course? And so this day we're golfing just like every other time, uneventful, not story-worthy, nothing to talk about, until the 18th hole. Because on the 18th hole this day, we're about to get onto the green, and this fighter jet flies overhead. And as it flies overhead, we just look up, and we're kind of amazed at it. Well, while I'm looking at this plane, my older brother Donnie gets hit by a golf ball and falls to the ground. I didn't know he was hit by a ball, so I'm thinking we're at war. I thought the plane shot him. I'm hiding behind a tree, taking cover. I don't know what's going on. This is scary. And so he gets up, and he's like, you know, oh, he's in pain. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, somebody hit me, you know? And I'm like, yes, now I see why golf is fun. That's awesome, you know? And I'm laughing. He's crying. It was beautiful. And so then this guy comes driving over in his golf cart. He's speeding over, and you can see he's concerned, and he's apologetic. He's, I'm so sorry. I was yelling four, but you couldn't hear because of the plane. And, you know, he's like, are you okay? And everything's fine. And before he can leave, my older brother says, wait a minute, I know you. The guy's like, you do? So yeah, I recognize you. You're David Justice from the Atlanta Braves. And true story, his words were, are you going to sue me now? And I'm thinking, yes, we're rich, you know? And my older brother's like, no, I'm not going to sue you. I just would you take a photo with me? Because my friends will never believe that David Justice hit me with his driver. Shot off the tee, right? And so we get this awesome photo. We now have a story to talk about. I came home that day from golf, and my wife's like, how was golfing? I was like, it was great. And she's like, did you play well? Like, all confused because I don't play well. I'm like, no. But Donnie got hit by a golf ball by a guy who's trained to hit home runs. The ball was coming in hot, you know? Like, I'm all excited about it. Now I've got something to talk about. And it wasn't a part of our original plan. It was the thing that actually hurt my brother, right? But it was the moment we all talk about whenever we tell this story. If we avoid everything in life that wasn't a part of our plans, we just might miss out on the best moments of our life. And Joshua knew this. And so he wanted to trust God. He had watched how Israel in the past had stalled out and missed out on God's promise for them on the other side of their obedience. And he wasn't going to let that happen this time. And so let's jump back into our story and see what happens. It says, the priests came to the river. So remember, we're at that epic point where they're standing there. It says they're holding the Ark of the Covenant, and they're at the river's edge. Raging rapids are right in front of them. It's an intense moment. All of Israel's behind them. I bet they're looking up at the front to see what, are the priests really going to do it? Are we going to go for it this time? I'm sure the priests are sitting there holding it and look at each other. Maybe they even say a silent prayer like, God, make me brave. You make me brave. Call me off this shore into the waves. Only for them, it's not just a song with a good melody. It's real life. And their next step changes everything. It says, their feet touched the water's edge. And right away, the water coming down the river stopped flowing. It piled up far away at a town called Adam near Zarethan. The water flowing down to the Dead Sea was completely cut off. So the people went across the Jordan River opposite Jericho. The priests carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. They stopped in the middle of the river and stood on dry ground. They stayed there until the whole nation of Israel had gone across on dry ground. I mean, what a crazy scene to play out in your head. Thousands and thousands of people crossing what was a giant rapid on dry ground. All because of Joshua's willingness to trust God. To step out in faith and cross a boundary line that had held them back in the past. In many cases, what I found in my life, not always, but in many cases, I found that the borders I give God become the borders he asks me to cross. The things where I say, God, I won't do that. I can't do that. Don't ask me to do this. At times, those are the very things he says, step out into this area and trust me. And my faith comes alive. Our faith can come alive when we trust God enough to obey him. For some of us, our Jordan River is trusting God with our finances. It seems as scary as crossing a rapid. For some of us, this is maybe not something, a habit we've built in, and now we're following God, and we've just kind of built this border of, I just don't know if I can commit and give. And maybe God's saying, hey, for you to trust me, step out in faith. And for you to step out in faith, it might look like to commit to a regular percentage giving and trusting God with your finances. And it feels scary because it's, well, how are we going to afford things? But it's obedience, and it's just stepping out and saying, God, I trust that if I step out in faith, you'll step in faithful. For others of us, maybe it's dating. Maybe we're single, and you know, it's for us to be all in our faith and to step out and trust God. It would look like we decide to date differently than maybe what culture would suggest, or maybe than what we would even want. But we would say, God, I want what you have for me. I want your best for my life. So I'm gonna trust you in this area of dating and trust you without limits. For others of us, it might be community. Maybe your Jordan River is getting into community. It's been a border. Like, God, I'll do the attend thing. I can do that much, but don't ask me to get into relationships. Maybe there's this fear of how will I be received once people get to know the real me? Or maybe for you, the fear comes from hurt in the past. And it might even have been hurt from a church experience in the past. And maybe God's still saying, I still want you to get into community, but for you it feels like a risk now. It feels like your Jordan River. Maybe that's the area that God's asking you to step out and trust him in faith. Not all Jordan moments are outward physical steps. You know, Jesus comes on the scene many years after Joshua, and he really establishes this idea of kind of our spiritual or internal Jordan moments. You know, matters of the heart. So for some of us, our Jordan River might be forgiveness. Trusting God to step out and forgive who we know he's asking us to forgive, but we have a hard time with it because if we feel like if we forgive this person, then they get away with it. And so instead we've harbored anger and bitterness. And God's saying, I want you to trust me and forgive. Maybe it's confession, kind of a secret sin or something that you know that you're supposed to share, an honest conversation that you're supposed to have, but you're putting it off. You're settling. And God says, I've got a better plan for you on the other side of your obedience. Physical and internal or spiritual Jordans, these moments test our faith. And listen to what James says about our faith. He says, the same is true with faith. Without actions, faith is useless. By itself, it's as good as dead. Saying you got to start to do some of this. The truth is, the enemy of our souls wants to keep us away from God. And if he can't keep us away from God, then he wants to keep us away from God's best for our life. But if we ignore the fear and trust God and step out, few things can be more fulfilling than taking that step. And that was the story for Andre and Diana Enriquez, family and members here at Eastlake Church. And their journey and story of trusting God and living by faith started when they got pregnant with their son, Andrew. And they found out that there would be some complications, and then they later learned that Andrew would be born with Down syndrome. And so I've asked Diana, would you just tell me what it looks like for you and your family to live by faith on a day-to-day basis? And here's what she told me. She said, being told that your son would not live to be born is quite a scare, but that, on top of being told your son has Down syndrome, was worse. When my husband and I were told by the doctor all the things that our son wouldn't be able to do, it was devastating to us. Our fear of what he would not become and what he would not be able to do was overtaking our faith. We started thinking, why us? It took about 3 years of us feeling sorry for ourselves and wanting everyone's pity to realize that we need to use this for good in the world. When we became Christians and started believing that God's words and promises are true, we began realizing that we needed to turn our fears and doubts into faith. Living by faith for us means knowing that everything that happens in our son's life is all a part of God's great plan for him. Everything we're handed in life by our living God is all for his glory and good. He handpicked us to be Andrew's parents, and we're so grateful for his blessing. This is a family who has stepped out and trusted God in faith, and they're learning that as we do that, man, God steps in faithful. You know, what I'm learning in my journey with God is that as I cross these river moments in my life, that the what if questions change. They change from being a what if I fail or what if this doesn't work out to what if I had never taken this step? Look at what I would have missed if I had not been obedient to God. That's how our questions change. And the best news is we don't have to cross these rivers alone. Point number three, if you would write this down, is this. I can trust without limits when I remember that God is with me. The more I get to know God, the more I learn that I can trust him. And God wants us to know this about him, that he is with us. At the end of our story here with Joshua, they cross the river on dry ground. Everybody's there safely. And God tells Joshua to do something very important. He says, pick 12 guys to go to the center of the river, because at this point, the river had not come back closed yet. So he was still holding the river back. So he said, go to the center of the river where there's dry ground and grab 12 stones from the center of the river. Bring them to your new camp on the other side of the Jordan, the new side of the Jordan, and build a monument with these stones. And then he goes on to tell Joshua why these stones will be significant. And this is where I want to read real quick as we finish this story. God tells him, the stones will serve as a reminder to you in the days to come. Your children will ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the Lord of the cut off the flow of the water in the Jordan River. Tell them that its water stopped flowing when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went across. The stones will always remind the Israelites of what happened there. So God says, grab these stones, bring them over onto the new side, and build this monument. And this will be the way that you can remember and always remember that I was with you in the difficult time. That when you stepped out in faith, I stepped in faithful. I don't want you to forget this. I don't want you to forget that I'm with you. So that in the future, when you're faced with the risk of the faith adventure, you'll be able to remember that I was with you then, so I'll be with you today. And he tells them to build this monument, kind of a legacy of their faith. For some of us, we might not have this monument or legacy of our faith as our history. Maybe for you, you're even like a first-generation Christian. Maybe you're the first person in your family who's living for Jesus. And so for you, maybe it seems difficult to step out in faith because you don't have those monuments to look back on. But the cool thing is, what if you could be that person for your family who establishes this way of living? Who kind of becomes the Joshua of your family and starts to do what nobody else did and step out in faith. And as you do, you can remember how God was with you. As you step out in faith and he steps in faithful. Maybe you're in high school or college and you're thinking, man, you know, I don't know about this. Well, my encouragement to you would be start building a legacy of faith right now. Become somebody who grows and continues to follow God and even at a young age says, I'm going to be somebody who lives by faith. And you can build these moments and monuments in your life that you can look back on later on. For others of us, maybe we feel like we've blown it in this area. Maybe you feel like it's just too late because there's been opportunities where you knew God was asking you to do something and you said no. And you're wondering, is it too late for me to jump on and get into this adventure of living by faith? And for you, I would say, Joshua was 80 years old when God asked Joshua to cross the Jordan. You see, this journey never stops. This living by faith thing never ends. And we're all invited to step out in faith and start living that way today. And as we do that, I just want to kind of end with some quick closing thoughts to help us step out in faith. The first one is this: you will never go where you never go. But you can stay safe, and God will love you, and you can be saved. You can be a Christian and not experience everything that God has planned for your life, if that's what you want. Or you can step out in faith. Another one, you will never do what you never do. The goals and dreams that keep you up at night, maybe even the promises that you feel God has given you, or the next right steps he's asking you to take won't just happen. We have to actually do things with our faith. And lastly, you will never be who you will never be. Basically, if I want to be known for living a life of faith, at some point I have to start living a life of faith. So what is your Jordan? What is the thing that you've maybe been avoiding or putting off that God's asking you to trust him in? And what is at stake for you? Or maybe even for your family if you don't step out in faith. Last week we ended with this question, and I want to end the same way this week. And here's the question: what would you do in your circumstance if you were absolutely confident that God was with you? Would you be more likely to trust? As we close, I just want to end with a moment of silence. And I want us to take some time to just pause and maybe consider, what is it that God's asking of me? Would you join me in this? Well, God, we want to be people who live by faith, who trust you, who are obedient. And God, we want to step out and trust like Joshua, and it might be scary, it might be intimidating, but we pray for your help. We ask that you would remind us of your presence with us this week as we begin to cross some of these Jordans in our life and step out in faith. And I pray that in Jesus' name, amen.